Hannah and Hannah Show, a podcast featuring two incredibly dedicated Wellesley students documenting their time abroad over in Scotland. In today's segment, Hannah and I are going to be taking a little bit of a serious tone as we both have pondered over the world's most serious environmental problems during our time away from Wellesley. So Hannah, what's the littlest known yet most significant environmental problem facing us today?
Well, I think it's really important to talk about the environmental impacts of militarization. The environmental impact of war is usually discussed in terms of the consequences of physical conflict and the deployment of weapons, but the process of preparing for war and disarming from war can also be damaging to a country's own environment as well. The compounds developed and stored on U.S. military bases, in depots, and in weapons development facilities can harm the people who work and live there without ever being deployed. Together, the various branches of the military are responsible for 87% of federally owned sites on the EPA's National Priorities List, which lists contaminated sites deemed a risk to public health. The compounds involved range from jet fuel to explosives to volatile organic compounds to heavy metals like arsenic, chromium, and lead. There's even radioactive residue, so I think it's a pretty big deal. What do you think we should be concerned about right now?
Wow, that's interesting. You know, as a political science major, I never thought about the consequences of war like that. But I've actually been thinking a lot about climate change, but not in the way you may think. I've been thinking and writing about resilience against climate change, specifically in low-income and vulnerable communities. Those who are most vulnerable are those who are low-income, the elderly, children, and communities of color. And so I'm interested in learning more about their stories and hearing their voices.
So you've always been interested in studying climate change, but how did you become interested in resilience, and what does it mean to you?
So the year is 2015, and what I've noticed, as many others, is that climate change is really already happening. When you hear stories of extreme weather events, such as Hurricane Sandy barreling down the East Coast, or the deadly heat waves that killed hundreds across the Middle East this past spring, you begin to realize that climate change really is happening and something else besides mitigation needs to be done. This is where resilience comes in. And so resilience to me is related, but not necessarily equal to climate adaptation. It's like adaptation in that it focuses on the physical will and strength to bear an extreme weather event. Yet it's slightly different because it means that a community or town or city is not only prepared to endure a stressful event, but is also able to be strengthened and come out even stronger. There are a lot of underlying factors, social, economic, political, that can determine a community's resiliency and must therefore be taken into account in preparing and adapting for climate change. So that's how I got started in studying resilience. How about you? When did you first hear about this problem?
Well, I grew up in New Jersey, where there are actually a surprising number of military Superfund sites. And actually, there was a General Services Administration depot that used to store mercury for the U.S. government. And after they moved out, it was discovered that the mercury had leached into the soil. I grew up just a mile away from that site. And so that was how I first became aware that this was a problem. And as I learned more, I discovered that it's not just a problem near me, it's a problem all across the country and all across the world. There are areas of the country where there are explosives just buried underneath the soil, there are chemical weapons buried in caches all over the country, and there are even sites, especially in Nevada and New Mexico, that will be uninhabited for thousands of years because of nuclear residue. And so this has really changed the way I think about some climate issues, especially regarding things like offshore weapons dumps, where there are caches of chemical weapons off the coast of Hawaii and New Jersey that could potentially be disturbed by a huge storm and could even detonate. So that's really changed the way I think about the consequences of climate change and the increased likelihood of huge hurricanes. How has your study changed your perspective on the image of climate change?
So actually, when I've been studying resiliency, I've found myself having a more optimistic perspective when it comes to the issue because, you know, a lot of it you hear is very doom and gloom. A lot of scientific models are projecting, you know, climate catastrophes, very much day after tomorrow, science fiction kind of things. And it can really alienate a population and make it a subject you don't really want to talk about. But what I've realized is that in the nature of resiliency, it's fundamentally about increasing preparedness and mitigating the risk to make people and communities stronger and not weaker. And by tackling social and economic inequities, resiliency can solve more than just one problem. So that's really surprised me. So Hannah, through your research, what's the most surprising story you've learned?
Well, when I was doing my research, I read the book Aftermath by Donovan Webster, and I learned about buried weapons in France from the first two world wars that are still active and dangerous today. And I thought that that issue was sort of confined to the places in the world where World War I and World War II had actually been fought on the ground, like especially in Europe. But it turns out it's not. Spring Valley, Washington, D.C., actually had a huge problem in the 1990s when a golden retriever, of all things, discovered a cache of buried chemical weapons at a construction site that had been left there by a military testing facility. When the war was over, they disposed of the weapons by just burying them, and they were completely forgotten. And this really showed me that wars don't just end when the treaty is signed. You still have to figure out how to disarm and how to disarm safely and what to do with all of the damage that's already been done. And unfortunately, things like World War I, which have been over for a century, are still affecting lives today and are still causing damage and death today. So this was a huge revelation for me. So what are the most important concepts that you've learned related to your research?
I think one of the biggest takeaways through the study of resilience is that there's an opportunity to listen to the voices of communities, to hear what people have to say, what their lives are like and how climate change is affecting them. And so this is really a fantastic way to amplify previously marginalized voices, voices who have suffered throughout the years due to lies in development, you know, social systems, institutions, etc. And so, you know, it's through implementing resiliency and adaptation programs that to me are the ways to put people on the front lines of climate change, on the front lines of adaptation. They can absolutely exemplify and lead other communities in confronting a problem that actually will eventually confront all of us. So climate change could seriously impact future generations. What about the environmental consequences of militarization? What would happen if we didn't do anything?
Well, there are some things that we can't do anything about, like radiation in Nevada deserts left over from nuclear testing. That's sort of a law of physics that we can't rush the half-life of these elements. And we're going to have to find a way to keep people safe over potentially the next several thousand years, even when our civilization might look very different. On the other hand, there are more immediate threats. There are situations like the ones I've discussed where offshore weapons dumps could potentially be triggered by a storm or by a ship, and the ones in the United States could potentially harm wildlife, could potentially affect shipping, but there are global examples of this that could be potentially even more deadly. One great one that was even on the BBC this week was the SS Richard Montgomery, which sunk just a mile and a half offshore in England, and it's in the estuary of the River Thames. If it were disturbed, there's a potential that it could detonate, and 1,400 tons of explosives left over from World War II could go off, setting off a tidal wave that could potentially go up the River Thames and do serious damage in London. And this is one of those crazy stories that I don't think we even think about enough. We certainly don't think about it enough in the United States. So what do you think will happen in the future related to climate change?
You know, I actually get this question a lot, and when people ask it, it really frustrates me because it makes me realize that people don't realize that climate change is happening. They often think it's a distant issue, which will get worse, which is true in many regards. But at the same time, hearing people ask this makes me realize that there is a disconnect between those who are privileged to live in safe areas and those who are on the front lines of climate change. So, for example, I've been doing a lot of research about the impacts to coastal communities in Alaska, many of which are native villages and low income. And what's happening up there in terms of flooding and erosion is pretty astounding and tragic. The natives who have been living there for centuries are being forced to move because of these slow onset disasters. And yet, they aren't the ones responsible for climate change. And what's worse, most Americans don't even know that this is all going on. So for me, I think we need to ask ourselves what we can be doing now in terms of resiliency. So as such, it is important to communicate this and explain that these events are happening and we need to work together to take action and have more of a sense of urgency.
Thanks for listening to our podcast this week. If you are interested in any of the issues we talked about, be sure to check out the ES399 blog page for more in-depth analysis about our beats. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, too!